So now it's my turn. So have you heard that Power Platform can become a remote controller? That sounds interesting, doesn't it? So let's talk about this. So my name is Justin from Microsoft as a cloud advocate. And this is my Twitter handle. So if you like, you can mention me and I'm happy to answer. So Power Platform as a remote controller sounds a bit weird and at the same time exciting, but let me tell you about my story, why I started this challenge. Once upon a time, not exactly once upon a time, but it was in May this year. I invited a guest speaker for my YouTube video streaming. She talked about how she used her Raspberry Pi for her air conditioning system at home. It sounded so fun. So I got huge inspiration from her story. So I started thinking whether I could make it for myself or not, because I have no knowledge on Raspberry Pi and other hardware stuff. So at the same time, I started thinking of being mobile friendly. What if I can run it outside home? That sounds really fun and that sounds really exciting. Fortunately, there is a perfect solution for me, which is Power Platform, especially Power Apps and Power Automate. You know, Power Platform is really versatile so that I can apply it to my requirements, which is running as a remote controller. So basically, as long as you have an idea and Power Platform can realize your, your idea, so which is really good. So as I said earlier, I'm also new to those kind of a hardware world and Raspberry Pi, but eventually I made it. How? So let me share my story as a beginner. So in order to turn my Power Apps into a remote controller, I had to follow those four steps. The first one, a remote controller registration, then build an API server, then open to the cloud, then finally build the Power Apps. So the hardest part was, of course, the hardware part. Yes, that's the hardware hardest part. Yeah, let's start. The first thing I did was to find as much information as I could, because I had no idea how they work. Back in 6 years ago, a friend of mine gave me this Raspberry Pi. Okay, so what should I do with this? He told me that I would be able to do anything with it. Really? Okay, so back then I was not that interested in, so I just put that into a deep corner of my drawer and never pulled it out until now. Now I got something to do with it. So he gave me that Raspberry Pi 6 years ago, but I'm now using it. So it's still perfectly working fine. So that should be fine. So the first thing I want to do was to make this Raspberry Pi take the remote controller signals. To do this, I needed this software called LIRC, which stands for the Linux Infrared Remote Controller. So it's a software that handles the remote controller signals. And this is a hardware that actually captures the remote controller signals and capture the remote signal to the home appliances. So you can buy this hardware, this module, IR sensor module, from Amazon or somewhere the online stores. So to turn Raspberry Pi into a remote controller, first of all, we need to register my existing remote controller to Raspberry Pi. So fortunately, there is a remote controller database already, so which is called lirc-remote.sourceforge.net. So if your remote controller has already been registered into that database, your life will be much easier. However, what if my remote controller doesn't exist in the database? Then I have to register mine by myself. So this is the within the IR sensor module, this is the receiver part. So through this part, I can register my remote controller signal. So this is how I register my remote controller. The command mode 2 is a part of LILC. So when I run this command, it waits for me sending the remote controller signals. And as you can see, the remote controller signal consists of a big block of numbers. So I don't know what they exactly means, but I only guess they are a sort of infrared light signals. As I said, it's light signals, which means it can be interfered by natural light. So every time I push the same button, the number block changes over time. But I also guess that the home devices can recognize my button as long as the infrared number signal sits in a certain range. So, and the more complex your remote controller is, and the number block you can see is the bigger. So I registered my remote controller, TV remote controller, because it was the simplest one at home. So, all right, I just passed the hardest part. Yay! Now, Raspberry Pi works as like a remote controller. So this part of the IR sensor module actually sends the remote controller signals to home appliances. So this is how Raspberry Pi turns on my TV. I just use the command IR send once TV switch on. IR send comes from LILC and TV and switch on comes from my remote controller registration data. Then, you know, as you can see, the TV has turned on and it will be showing my Netflix screen there. Yeah, here we go. Then I send another command, IR send once TV switch off, and which means it will turn off my TV. Here we go. So now I get the Raspberry Pi working as a remote controller, which is all good. So yeah, basically I configured my home network with my Raspberry Pi attached to my home the home network. So let's move on to the next part. I was able to activate my Raspberry Pi into become a remote controller, but that's not enough because I still needed to run the command within the Raspberry Pi. So what if I build an API server within the Raspberry Pi to execute my command through API from outside? So that's the second step. So fortunately, it's a super simple. Just copy the existing code from the GitHub. There is already code from the GitHub. So just copy that into the Raspberry Pi and run this command, npm run start. So I will show you how it works. I'm now in the Raspberry Pi. So I just run the command, npm run start. Then API server starts and waiting for my request. Then I go to the web browser and type the URL to send an API request to switch on the TV. Here we go, the switch TV has turned on. Now I send another request to turn off my TV. So if I send, then here we go, TV has turned off. So my Raspberry Pi is now working as an API server at the same time a remote controller. So the second hardest part is completed. So as long as I can send the API request to my Raspberry Pi, then it works as a remote controller. So my home network can turn on and off my TV through the API. Still, it's running within my home network, meaning I still cannot turn on and off my home appliances outside home. Say it's a really warm day, so I want to turn on my air conditioning as soon as I get off from my the train station. Then, yeah, how can I do that? I can't do that actually now. So the next step was I need to open my remote controller to be accessible from the internet. So in order to execute the API outside my home network, I should open my home network to the internet. So I don't think it's a good idea, because it means that if once I open my home network to the internet, it basically, potentially, anyone can see my home. It's a big risk. It's a big security risk and safety risks. So I don't want to do that at all. So I did some research and I found a very handy little tool called ngrok. So ngrok provides you with a public URL that allows you to access to the Raspberry Pi from the internet. And actually ngrok runs within the Raspberry Pi. So, and ngrok generates a public URL that only exposes what I want to. In other words, I can only expose my API endpoint through ngrok, not anything else. So all other, my home network is still protected. And if I restart the ngrok, the public URL also changes. So let me show you how it works. So on the left-hand side, I just run the API server within Raspberry Pi. So it starts working. Then on the right-hand side, I run ngrok. As I said, it only exposes my API endpoint. So yeah, not anything else. So, and it randomly generates the URL. And if I restart the ngrok, it changes over time. So with this ngrok URL, I can turn on my TV. See how it's going? And now I can turn off my TV. Yep. So with this ngrok, I exposed my home network to the internet with very limited scope through. In other words, ngrok makes a very secure tunnel from the internet to the home network so that only the API endpoints are exposed. But there is another problem on ngrok, because we use the ngrok for free of charge, which means the free version of ngrok always changes, keeps changing the endpoint URL whenever I start. So whenever the URL changes, I should remember it to run outside home. So therefore, we need a kind of a facade that encapsulates the ngrok URL so that I can only call the facade API to turn it on and turn it off. So how does it work? So let me show you. So on the left-hand side, I run the API server on Raspberry Pi. On the right-hand side, I run the ngrok to expose the endpoint URL to the internet. So I have as a function facade, with this randomly generated URL, I just change the configuration on my facade. Then, yeah, now it's working. So everything is ready. So from this point, I only needed to remember that facade API URL to turn on my TV. So yeah, this is as a function facade, my TV is turned on. Now through this, the facade API, I can turn off my TV. So now everything is exposed to the internet. I mean, only that endpoint part is exposed to the internet. So yeah, seems to be all good. Now I got the facade to the home network. So we got the facade. So yeah, it's okay. But I still need a web browser to turn on and off my TV. So yeah, using web browser is fine. But you know, in order to become mobile friendly, I need something more. Now, here we go. So Power Platform comes to rescue. So I'm going to use Power Automate for the API call. I mean, for the facade call. So I built a Power Automate workflow like this. So this workflow only calls, it's very simple, only calls the facade API with a few parameters passed from the Power Apps. So now I get the Power Automate workflow to call the facade, which is going good now. So, but still not mobile yet. The Power Automate workflow is a kind of a stopgap to become mobile. So it's time to build a mobile app using Power Apps. So if you are not familiar with Power Apps, that's totally fine. It's really easy to use as long as you know how Excel functions work. So within the Power App, I put two buttons here, on and off here, and each button is associated with this Power Automate workflow, which I just created. And as you can see, these are the functions that Power Apps use. So it looks like Excel functions. So yeah, there is no code or kind of things. So yeah, we only remember how the functions work. With this, if I run the Power App, it actually turns on and off my TV, right? And this is the result of the current result of my TV status. So you don't believe it? So let me show you a demo. The same thing as on the left-hand side, I run the API server within Raspberry Pi. And on the right-hand side, I run ngrok to get the random URL. Then with this random URL, I update my facade API. So this facade API is updated. Then everything is ready for Power Apps to use this endpoint. So I opened my Power App here. So Power App is opened, and I open my Power App and tap the open button, tap the on button, and it will show you the results. Can you see the yellow result? So TV has turned on. Now I tap the off button and it switches off my TV. So yeah, Power App now working perfectly as a remote controller. So now I got the full end-to-end workflow to turn on and turn off my TV at home using my mobile app. And now I can, I can do it even outside home. So this is the actual video that runs on my mobile phone. As you can see, when I tap the button, So when I tap the button on, it actually turns on my TV, but my TV is called smart TV. So smart means it needs a time to boot up to show up my Netflix screen. So yeah, TV has turned on. Now it will display my favorite Netflix screen. Come on. Here we go. Now I tap the off button to turn it off. So yeah, TV has turned off. So this is the real example. So I got the Power App that works as a home remote controller. While I was building this app, I learned several things. First of all, because I was very new to Raspberry Pi, all the information I need was sitting outside my comfort zone. In other words, it was sort of hard to find where I should start from. And because all the information is outside, it's outside my knowledge area. So I was very reluctant to start because I wasn't that comfortable for doing this. If I knew something, and at least I knew of some bits and pieces, then I can, I was very happy to jump in, but okay. Is it okay to jump in? The kind of a reluctant feeling was dominating at the very first time. But the challenge began. I start doing research. The first thing was to know where the relevant information is and make sure whether the information is up to date or not. Because when you find the information, the next step is combine those information by trial and error approach. If I knew any of them, then I can straight apply that, but I have no idea, which means I need to apply this one. Oh, it doesn't work. This apply that one. Oh, it works. Okay, that's fine. This kind of trial and error approach works the best at the very first time, because if you are very new. So as I said, that part was the most time consuming part and the hardest part, because I spent a lot of time there. But this trial and error eventually made my day. So another one is all the information I found, I wasn't sure that whether they are relevant to me and they are the up to date or something like that. So just try and find something that fits my the requirement. Then the next step was I record it. So I noted down how that works and reproduce it a few times to make sure that is my solution or not. And while doing this kind of a trial and error, it may require you to do a bit of coding, but that's okay. As I said, it's just a sort of a finding, a missing puzzle. So don't worry about doing some coding. It's just a few lines of code. And the good thing is there are people already out there. They have done a lot of coding for me. So in fact, many codes or stuff you need are already on the internet. As I said, someone has already had a similar idea to yours. So they made something for you. All you can do is to find the right info and apply it and do some small tweaking. And while doing those kind of tweaking, copy and paste works the best. Copy and paste is the best approach. So as long as it works, that's fine. And I try a few times to make sure that is my solution or not. Then start from there, you can tweak something, some small thing to fit your solution. So yeah, so this is almost my at the end. So I got some homeworks for you. Here are two links that you should be reading and following in your own time. They are actually my blog post that records all my trial and errors. Those notes might be applicable to you or might not be applicable to you. So if that works for you, that's totally fine. But if that some bits and pieces doesn't work for you, then do some trial and error and do some small tweak, then it will be working. So also, I had talked a lot of things, including Power Platforms. So take this, it's a time to take a snapshot with this screen. So if you want to learn something further about Power Platform, the best place is Microsoft Learn. This is the starting point you can do. And also, Microsoft provides you with many video learning materials. Visit Microsoft Learn TV and Twitch, Microsoft developers, to watch your interest. Take this snapshot and visit this URL. Right, this is it from me. Thanks for listening. I'm always on Twitter. So if you like, you can mention me and say hi, and I'm happy to answer. And straight after this session, I'll be jumping on Twitch/Microsoft Developer to answer your questions. Thanks, Donna. Thanks, Seth, to having me for this amazing event. And again, everyone, thanks for listening. Bye.